You are now listening to a podcast made in collaboration with the Copenhagen College Radio.
Happy Halloween, ghouls and gals, and welcome to episode 37 of the Social Media and Politics Podcast, bringing you expert insights into how social media is changing the political game. I'm your host, Michael Becetta, political scientist at the University of Copenhagen. You can follow us on Twitter at SMNP Podcast and also on Facebook, facebook.com/Social Media and Politics Podcast. All right, y'all, for this episode, we are going to the depths of
the dark web.
And this episode topic comes out of a Twitter poll that I ran a while back where the winning response to what I should do an episode on is social networks on the dark web. And I had a little bit of trouble thinking, how am I going to do that? I don't know anyone who's on the dark web. But I was running some Google searches and found a blog by a guy named Cyphus. And Cyphus goes down into deep areas of the dark web, and he writes reviews about different marketplaces where you can buy illicit goods and also social networks. So I wanted to get him on the line, and I don't really know who he is. I don't know what he's an expert in, but he definitely seems to know quite a bit about the dark web. And so we're going to get into that and talk about what kind of political implications could be coming out of that. But I think it's good to kind of foreground a bit exactly what the dark web is. And so I've been reading up on this, and you have a difference between the clear net, the deep web, and the dark web. So the clear net is all the things that you can search via Google, anything that ends in a domain like .com, .net, .org, the stuff that most of us are familiar with. That's the clear net. Now, there's another element called the deep web, and that's where most of the internet space is. And so the deep web is anything that's behind a login or a paywall. So like bank accounts, if you go onto Facebook, you can access some of it from the clear web, but then to get into your profile, you would go into the deep web. And again, that's where most of the internet is. And then you have the dark web, which is made up of what's called overlay networks. So the dark web is sets of dark nets, which are networks that are put on top of the web, and they require a certain software or authorization to go into. So the most famous one is the Tor browser, T-O-R, that stands for the Onion Router. And this is a technology that was developed by the Navy in the mid-90s. And what it does is it makes IP addresses very hard to track by relaying them through different nodes, kind of like laundering where your IP is going, so that it makes it very, very difficult for people to track your behavior because it's pinged around all these different relay nodes at random. So what you do is you download Tor, and then you can access the Tor network. And so I did that, and I went into the dark web, and I was kind of playing around with it a little bit. And what I noticed was it was very slow. A lot of the sites were down. It was very difficult to navigate. And the couple of social networks that I went on weren't all that exciting. I didn't seem to have so many people using them. And from what I've been reading more recently in Wired and Motherboard and these kind of internet blogs is that actually the Tor network is shrinking. I think about 0.03% of the overall web is the Tor network. And it just doesn't seem like it's being kept up. So these social network sites, they open up and then they close down and they reopen and different people open them. So I don't really know what's going on there. I was hoping to find some really interesting stuff politically that might be happening. And Cyphus and I, we do get into that a little bit. But in terms of social networks on the dark web, it doesn't seem that there's really so much there except for a sub-community who's interested in very taboo topics. But still, I think the interview is very interesting. And we basically just talk about like what is the dark web? How does it work? And you know what's going on in this space that the media has reported on quite a bit, but it seems that people still really don't know what's going on there. So let me go ahead and welcome on Cyphus, and I hope you enjoyed the interview. My guest today is Cyphus, a writer who reviews various services, marketplaces, and social networks on the dark web. You can find out more about his work on his ClearNet blog, direclown.wordpress.com, and where he writes reviews on darkweb.reviews. Cyphus, thanks so much for taking the time out. Welcome to the Social Media and Politics Podcast.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
So let's start out a bit with your background and experience with the dark web. When was the first time you logged on and what brought you there?
Well, I first heard about the dark web, as many people do, through YouTube. And it wasn't a video about the dark web specifically, but it was this horror film called A Serbian Film. And a lot of people consider it to be one of the most disturbing films ever made. And someone in the comments section on that video said, "You think this is disturbing? This is nothing compared to what's on the dark web." And and it sounded pretty silly, you know, but I was immediately intrigued. And so I Googled what is the dark web and how to access the dark web. And that's how I was brought to Tor. The Tor browser is one of the ways in which people access the so-called dark web. And I guess we can talk a little more about that.
Yeah, because you had kind of suggested that I go and do that. And so I did. And it's just like downloading Google Chrome, for instance. And then from there, you can go straight into it. But my experience was that as soon as I logged on, I kind of didn't know where to go. Like on the ClearNet, you would go to Google and then maybe search for something. But so can you go into exactly like how does one go about navigating through the dark web?
Well, just like on the ClearNet, which is the reciprocal term to dark web, some people call it surface web. That's not really technically correct. But So it has search engines too, just like the ClearNet does. There's one called Not Evil, and it's sort of considered like the Google of Tor. And not too long ago, they actually made it look like a parody of Google, like it had the, you know, the colors, like the logo and everything. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you can search for web pages on there and stuff. The one difference is you may not find exactly what you're looking for. I don't know if their search algorithm's not as good or whatever, but that is one way that I kind of navigate around. Actually, my first time going on to Tor, I used what's called the Hidden Wiki. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, I came across that, which basically has a bunch of links to other sites, right? It's kind of like an aggregator of links.
Yeah, yeah. I've since learned that it's mostly scams. In fact, people have, and I don't know if it was designed this way, but it was almost like to ensnare people who were new to the whole dark web thing, like, oh, you want to navigate the dark web? Well, here's a bunch of scams, but you don't know that.
And right.
So... So any of the, I guess it's not all the sites, but any of the ones that are sort of financial services like, ooh, double your Bitcoin, or those are all scams. And I've learned that seems to comprise a good chunk of what's on the dark web. There are scams of various kinds.
Because one of the things that was also interesting to me was that I think I was on one called Torch, a kind of search engine.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just looking, trying different keywords, and a lot of the research results were actually links to things on the ClearNet, like Wikipedia, for example. So it's kind of, it's in the dark web, but it's also kind of like includes some of the ClearNet, right?
Some of it. It depends on the search engine. I think Wikipedia recently set up a dark website. I didn't know that it was active yet, but so if you found Wikipedia on there, it might have been their Onion site. And I don't know if you've explained to your listeners what the Onion sites mean or...
No, but go ahead.
So any site that's on Tor is going to end in the domain name .onion. And the reason for that is Tor uses this technique called onion routing, and that's what keeps you anonymous. It basically routes your traffic, your web traffic, through these different relays, and it's sort of, the analogy is it's like an onion because it's in layers. And so that's why the domain names end in .onion.
And that's to keep your traces anonymous, right? Because they're bounced around through so many different relay points.
Yeah, exactly. So if someone were to try to look at your IP address, it would appear as the IP address of one of the other relays or nodes in the network. And you can see that when you're using the browser, like it'll say Tor circuit for this site, and it'll say this browser, Canada, France, Germany, and then Onion site.
And so let's talk a bit about how I kind of discovered you on the ClearNet, which was you were writing, you write reviews about different marketplaces or different sites on the dark web. How did you come to start doing that?
Well, originally I was, there's this other site called deep.web.com. And that's a pretty popular publication for reading about the dark web. And I had been doing the blog for a while, the one called Secrets of the Dark. And I wanted to sort of branch out. And so I pitched an idea to this deep.web site, and I wrote a few articles for them. And then the guy who's the editor or webmaster for that site said, well, we have this new site called darkweb.reviews, and it doesn't have any articles on it yet. Would you like to write for us on there? And that's how I started writing for that site. And most of the articles I've done for that site are reviews of these darknet markets, as they're called. And would you like me to explain a little bit about what those are? Or?
Yeah, because when I was on the dark web, it was all about the markets. And I did manage to get on Silk Road 3, and I was like, oh my God, I got to get off before the government gets me.
Don't worry about that. But
but I think, and it's interesting, and I'm sure we'll get into this later, is there's a kind of argument to be made that those marketplaces are a type of social network, right? So why don't you, yeah, give us an overview of what the marketplaces are.
All right. Well, basically, they're e-commerce sites on the dark web, primarily Tor, and they sell mostly illicit goods. I think the most popular thing is drugs. Some sell weapons. Some also sell a popular thing is digital goods. That might include things like hacked accounts, like let's say it's a porn site account, but it's the Lifetime account or something like that, and you can get it for Bitcoin instead of, I think it's cheaper to buy it with Bitcoin than to pay the price that you would in dollars, let's say, on the ClearNet or something.
Right.
And they also have things like Uber accounts or PayPal, and usually these are bought through the process of carding, I think, and that's a whole other topic, but they'll like generate some kind of fake account and be able to kind of break into the service. And so those are some of the things that they sell on the market.
So kind of like a secondhand market for different accounts and passwords and stuff, identities.
Yeah, exactly.
So that seems to make up a bulk of the, like what I noticed is that a lot of links were just two different marketplaces that might be geared towards different things. Like one might be a drug marketplace and one might be a, you know, whatever, porn marketplace.
Yep, pretty much.
And so you've been writing different reviews about those marketplaces, right? And like what they,
yes,
what they offer and what are the differences?
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's been fun.
And so, yeah, and just because it's so interesting, I mean, we haven't really got to the politics side yet, but I mean, what do? You go down into those marketplaces just to kind of scout them out, or?
Well, it's twofold. I explain how to use them, first of all. I explain how to register, and then what you have to do to navigate around. I mean, they're not all exactly the same. Some of them, you have to get an invite code in order to register. I think it's to try to prevent law enforcement from registering. And then you connect it to a Bitcoin wallet, usually to be able to buy goods on there. Then you just kind of shop around like you would on, you know, Amazon or eBay, and you find what you want, and you select it, and it's kind of like I said, the process of buying something on the ClearNet, except it's illegal or sketchy, you know.
Right. Interesting. So in some of the reviews you wrote, and I'll put a link to this article specifically in the show notes, was one about social networks on the dark web. And I guess kind of unsurprisingly, like on the ClearNet, there are dark web social networks. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a bit of an overview into those? Like what's available in terms of social media on the dark net?
It seems like there are only a few social networks as you would think of the ones on the ClearNet. There are a few that I know of offhand. There's one called BlackBook, and then there's one called Galaxy 2, and there's a newer one I discovered recently called Psycho Social Network.
Right. And so I was able to get into all of those except for Galaxy 2. But
did they prevent you from registering or something?
The link was just down, which we were kind of talking off air is a common problem. And something I wanted to ask you about, which is before we go into like the different functions of these. So I registered an account on BlackBook. If anyone's there, it's at SMNP podcast. But anyways, and I found that there was only 11,000 users on the site as a whole. And I remember you wrote that they close down and restart in all different kind of phases. So
yeah.
What's the reason behind that? That they kind of, these links keep breaking, and I mean, it seems like it's a common feature of the dark web.
Well, again, I don't always know all the reasons. It might be, you know, that I guess depending on what was going on there, sometimes if they had criminal activity going on and they thought, oh, we've been compromised, then they might shut it down. Or it might be due to lack of funding. You know, some of them, they make their money through ads like you would on the ClearNet. And if it wasn't profitable, they would shut it down. Because I think a lot of people are on the dark web for profit, you know, like the marketplaces. And so some people are doing the social networks for a similar reason.
Mm-hmm.
And so my biggest guess is either they weren't making a profit or they were compromised in some way, either by law enforcement or by hackers or something. There's a lot of competition between the different sites on there that are doing things for profit, I would say. And they're not afraid to get malicious or get their hands dirty in the process.
Yeah, not if they're already on the dark web, I would say.
Right,
but
exactly.
But let's go into Black Book first, which was the one I was able to actually access. And it very much, I mean, it, obviously, as the name implies, it's kind of a parody of Facebook. And it very much looks like a Facebook from 2 or 3 years ago, where it's a lot more status updates and less, you know, flashy timeline that they have now. So what's your kind of take on Black Book? Like, what's actually being discussed on there?
Well, it varies some. The last I was on there, I noticed a lot of people who were into hacking and things like that. And also, as I'd mentioned, some of the illicit goods sales and things like that. Some people would advertise, you know, I'm selling, you know, these drugs or these hacked accounts. And then some people are just kind of seemed like average people, like, hey, what's up, guys? How you doing? And but the difference being that they didn't want to use their real name or their real identity, as you would on Facebook. You know how people say, I'm from, you know, Chicago or wherever, and they give all these real details about themselves. And that's a concern to some people. They want to socialize but not use their real identity. And I think that is a big part of it.
And it seemed to me, with this focus more on status updates, like text mostly, people would, exactly what you're saying, I saw a guy who was like, hey, I'm here to chat, what's up? And it seemed, I got the impression across the different dark web sites that I went to, that it's almost very forum-based, like reminded me of a 4chan or something. So, and it seemed that really carried into different, so even though Black Book as a social network, it's still treated very much like a forum. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Yes, definitely. I think people, if they're not there for, you know, selling stuff or something, I do think people just wanted to talk about different things. I did notice there was, you know how they have the groups on Facebook?
Mm-hmm.
They have similar things on Black Book, but it seemed to be about maybe more taboo topics and things like that. I noticed there was a group for like self-harm and cutters and stuff like that. And I'm sure there are things like that on the ClearNet, but, you know, so people could talk about this kind of thing, but again, not revealing their identities. And I noticed there were several groups about hacking. I think there were a lot of people who wanted to learn how to hack, and That's a very common question. In fact, I see people all the time who I think they have no idea about it. And they'll come on and they'll just be like, how can I hack Facebook, or how can I hack Instagram, et cetera, et cetera. Like, insert social network here. How can I hack? And I'm not an expert hacker, don't get me wrong, but I know that it's something you don't learn overnight. And it's not like I just type in, you know, hack, blah, blah, blah. And that just seems to be like, if you did a top 10 questions of what you get asked on Tor, that would be like number one or number two.
Yeah, I noticed, because I think between the time that you went on and I went on, as I said, I think they might have been down and came back.
Uh-huh.
Because I went and I was looking at the different groups, and you know, the major ones were, like, one was about Anonymous, the hacking group, and then there was a lot about hacking. But I tried typing in Trump, thinking there would be some Trump fan page, and there was almost nothing political in that sense. I mean, hacking can be a political act, right? But in terms of, like, formal politics, I didn't see. Have you noticed any people engaging in political discussion or sharing, you know, news across the site?
Huh. That's strange. You know, I've noticed that a little bit more on Galaxy 2 and some of the other sites. It might partially be that I think Tor tends to be more popular in Europe for some reason. And I don't know if that's because people are more aware of it or so that might be one reason that Trump wasn't a trending topic. But it might just be that particular website that it's not. I've noticed some other forums and sites where people are talking more about U.S. politics and things like that.
And where would that be? You said Galaxy 2, which we can get into in a second, but is it in more like online forums on the dark web or?
Yeah, I'd say more of the forums and things like that. I haven't been part of all the social networks, but on the ones that I've seen, that seems to be the case. Or maybe they're just not concerned about politics per se, but they're more involved in their own things like the businesses and the technical end of stuff.
Right. So let me ask you a bit about this Galaxy 2, which I think is down at the moment, or at least I couldn't get on it. What's the main difference between the Black Book, which is very similar to Facebook, and Galaxy 2?
Galaxy 2 seems to be more, it's definitely less scam oriented, I'll say that much. Like, it really seems like just a group of friends. In fact, it was sort of a successor to, there was another site before it just called Galaxy, and that site shut down for whatever reason. I think the creator of the site shut it down and the community missed it, so someone else created Galaxy 2. And, you know, like Facebook or Twitter, what have you, it really is just a lot of people socializing. And now there's still a lot of the technical hacking stuff that gets discussed, but I think they made it clear from the outset, you know, this is not a place for selling drugs or selling scam related things, and we just don't tolerate that. So I never noticed a lot of that on there. And they also have this feature that's a little bit like Twitter. They call it The Wire, and it's sort of news updates and things like that. Like, I mean, they don't call it tweeting, but I think they'll say, like, add your post to The Wire or something. So it's
like kind of microblogging.
Yeah, exactly. Microblogging.
Huh. And do those typically, in your experience, do they take more of, like, this kind of hacking orientation? Like, because that's kind of seems more suited to what people are on the dark web for. Or is it just a general, like, here's what the AP news update is for the day?
It's a little of both. There are parts of it that are, say, hacking oriented. I think, you know how I said they had the groups on Black Book? I think Galaxy 2 also had that. So there might be certain little groups dedicated to hacking, but it's not exclusively that. There seem to be a lot of tech savvy people on there. And then there were other groups that were just, you know, about arts and things like that. It sort of ran the gamut just as Facebook would.
And yeah, so I didn't get on Galaxy 2, but my common, at least looking through Black Book a little bit, was that there's really not much of substance going on there. they're kind of like, which was for me kind of my whole experience with the dark web was that it's, I mean, obviously I don't know all the places to go, but at the same time, it didn't seem to really have like a really like secret hidden agenda. It was just kind of just this space of a whole bunch of randomness and some, you know, some, I saw pictures of gore and, you know, pornography, hacking and stuff, but like kind of, you know what? It really reminded me of shortly after Napster, when they had all the torrents that you could get, like these weird videos of executions and stuff. Like that's kind of where that stuff is now. That was my impression.
Yeah. A lot of it, I think it depends what sites you go to. Like certain ones that get a lot of publicity or word of mouth, people are saying like, oh, this is the new site to go to. And those are the ones that tend to be very active. And then the ones that don't really make a blip, there won't be many people on those. And you know, maybe people started hearing about Black Book that, well, okay, if you're on there, it's a bunch of people trying to scam you. So maybe they lost a lot of their users or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think really the Black Book and the Hidden Wiki are actually affiliated in some way. I don't know exactly how. I think the same person or people run both of those sites. So if they're trying to scam people on the Hidden Wiki, they're probably also trying to scam people on Black Book in some way, shape, or form.
Right. Because I do remember on Black Book, like on Facebook, you would get a lot of ads, but these were the kind of dark web ads of mm-hmm. different illicit drugs on different marketplaces. So they were trying to drive traffic to those marketplaces more than anything else.
So it might be that those ads are to scam marketplaces or something. Like, there are whole sites on the dark web, as I guess I said, that are complete scams. Like, you can't actually, they'll advertise you can buy this or that, but you'll pay something and you'll never see a dime of it again, or never see a Bitcoin again.
Right, rather. Right.
And so.
And there was another one you mentioned, the Psycho social network, which I didn't log into, but I did go on it, and it seemed it had an interesting profile. What's that one all about?
That one is more oriented towards the gore videos and stuff that you mentioned earlier. Like, it's sort of, I don't know, taboo subjects. Again, I mentioned, I think, about the self-harm communities and stuff. There was a group on there I immediately noticed who was into that. They were all into cutting themselves and stuff like that. And I think they were to show pictures of it. And now, it might not be quite as bad as it sounds, but it was just sort of a fringe group. And I think the idea being that anything that's taboo to talk about or show on the ClearNet is okay here, you know.
Got it. Which is an interesting idea, that this is the kind of outlet, I guess, for that community or people interested in those kinds of things. But you raise an interesting point in one of your articles, that signing up for a social network, whether it's Black Book or Galaxy 2, kind of defeats the point of the dark web, because the whole point is to be anonymous. And if you kind of start leaving these traces, then you're not as anonymous as you would be. Can you kind of unpack that argument a bit?
Yeah. And when you told me that question, I really had to think about it. I don't know if it's that people don't always think about the anonymity factor, or they think, well, it's okay if I post on here because I'm quote unquote anonymous, you know, but I guess they sort of run that line between the two, showing your real self and being anonymous, like how they'll use, you know, a fake photo and a fake name, but they still want to interact with people in some way. Because, like, even the darknet markets, most of them have a forum too, where you can ask questions or say, you know, like, oh, I ordered this drug and it didn't come through, or, you know, so there is some social interaction on there, even if that seems counterintuitive. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, people are anonymous when they sign up for their accounts, but I mean, you have to use a real email in order to get an account.
Well, sometimes a few of the sites, I don't know if you knew this, you can use a fake email actually, or there are also email sites that have these disposable email addresses. I don't know if you've heard of that. There's one called Gorilla Mail, where you get an email address and it only lasts for 24 hours or something. So if you need to register for one of these sites, then you can use the temporary email address and do what you need to do, and then the email disappears. So I think some people do that, but
right. Interesting. It's a whole different operation. Like, just the, that's the kind of cool part, I think, about it, is that the people who are going in there, they probably know what they're doing, and then they use these sophisticated, relaying tools or what have you to really be completely off the grid.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I also wanted to ask you about is, you know, when we talk about social media, you know, we generally talk about Facebook and Twitter, but there's also these kind of one-to-one messaging platforms like WhatsApp and Telegram, whose point is also to be anonymous. And you've written about a dark web messaging service called Ricochet that, as I understand it, is quite similar, in that it's a kind of one-to-one encrypted messaging service on the dark web, what's the difference between Ricochet and these other encrypted apps?
Well, the main difference is that Ricochet uses Tor and the other ones don't, to my knowledge. The way that Ricochet works, is, and I'll try to explain it as simply as I can, is it creates what's called a Tor hidden service. Well, these onion sites, right, that I mentioned, those are all called Tor hidden services.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically that you're hosting a website or you're creating a place on the dark web, and it's hidden because the location of the servers is hidden, and you'd have to really put in a lot of effort to figure out where it's being hosted from. So with Ricochet, it basically your identity is one of those hidden services, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
When you sign up for it and you create an identity for yourself, it's like your identity is, you know, 123JSK57.onion, and then the other person also that you're talking to has one of those, I guess I'd call it a cryptographic identifier as their identity. And you can give them a custom name if you want to, but, and then your interactions with them are done through that hidden service. So it'd be very hard for someone to trace those messages.
So it's the same technology of the relay points where it bounces around versus being just kind of encrypted one-to-one.
Yeah, pretty much.
Got it. Okay. And are they available as mobile apps?
I don't think yet. At least not Ricochet.
Mm.
I think it's still kind of in beta form, but they might create a mobile app eventually. Right now, it's just available for Windows, Mac, and Linux computers.
And does that go for most of the, like, I didn't even think BlackBook, my impression was that it wasn't even popular enough to create a mobile app. But are there any kind of forums or marketplaces that have app integration?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
I mean,
I would imagine that creates a whole different, you know, you'd have to access Tor through your phone somehow, and maybe that's not developed yet.
Well, you can. I guess I didn't explain that, but there are some apps that you can use to access Tor through your phone. On Android devices, there's a proxy app called Orbot. And so with Orbot, you would connect to Tor. And then there's a browser that's like the Tor browser called OrFox. And like the Tor browser, it is actually a modified Firefox browser, but it's configured for mobile devices. And so first you have to have Orbot running in order to connect to the network, and then you open OrFox to be able to browse the onion sites and all that.
Like a two-step verification process or something.
Yeah, kind of.
So I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about those marketplaces.
Okay.
Which, as you mentioned, was a lot about illicit goods. I think it was on the Hidden Wiki where I was looking. They have different subsections of goods, so to say, and one of them was political, and I think another one was advocacy. And the types of things that I saw on there were political assassination, so crowd-sourced political assassinations, which I've heard that's kind of a scam, but
yeah.
I mean, first of all, have you ever heard of crowdsourced political assassinations?
But, yes.
Or what type of political services could be offered on the dark web?
I think that, again, would go back to the forums and stuff like that. Now, I don't know about as services, but can you clarify what you mean by that as like political services or...
Yeah, it was just a subheading in the Hidden Wiki, and it was just called political. And the one that would make the most sense for me in terms of what could have political impact was the idea of crowdfunding an assassin to take out a leader or somebody, which I think maybe was one of those scams. But
yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Because, yeah, there was some controversy around the closing of the Silk Road with that person being entrapped with having a hook in assassination attempts, or like you could hire assassins on the dark web, but I think that might be a bit overblown. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it is. There are several websites that claim to offer that service, the assassinations, and from what I understand, they're all scams. I think a lot of people have attempted to use it and lost all their money. In fact, I don't know if you heard about, there was this one site called Besa Mafia that made a lot of headlines recently because they advertised themselves on the ClearNet a lot. They set up blogs and they set up these fake sites where people would try to denounce them. And I think it was all the same guy doing all of it. And it turned out that it was just a big scam to steal Bitcoin. And so I'm inclined to think that the other assassination sites are doing the same thing. It's just some kind of scam, because it seemed just so exaggerated and bold. And I don't know. I know it's something that people tend to think of when they think of the dark web, like, ooh, assassins and,
right,
you know, and live murder, but it's really urban legend-y.
And is there any, I mean, I'll ask you in a second about the hacking part, but aside from that, I mean, is there any kind of political use of the dark web? Like, I was thinking this would be where, you know, anonymous terrorist groups would congregate, or different activists would have, you know, groups and pages within the dark web, but...
There are a lot of political sites. I was trying to find some of them while I've been on the phone with you, actually. I've been having trouble connecting like you were, but I know there was one site I found called Democrat Watch, and it's a pretty much a conservative forum on the dark web. And some of them also, I don't know if I explained this, they have both ClearNet sites and dark web sites, but it's like in case the ClearNet site gets shut down, they still have the Tor site. I think that's what it is.
And wasn't this recently with the Daily Stormer, the kind of alt-right?
Yes.
They were shut down and they went on the dark web, right?
Mm-hmm. I think even their dark web site got shut down, but too controversial even for the dark web, right? But yeah, that was one instance. They figured, you know, well, we can't get away with it on the ClearNet, so we can get away with it here. There's another site. I don't know if you've heard of Encyclopedia Dramatica.
Nope.
It's kind of a, well, it looks like a parody of Wikipedia. And I think it's run by some people from 4chan. And just about every page is like making fun of someone or something. Like you look up Wikipedia and there'll be like, Wikipedia are a bunch of faggots who are too politically correct, and they're too thin-skinned, you know, stuff like that. It's like making fun of everything and everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so they also have a site on Tor, because I think they attracted a lot of controversy for some of their pages. And I guess they figured, well, if we're on Tor, then nobody's going to bother us. So
yeah, it's, again, and I wanted to ask you about this, because you said you got into the dark web from a YouTube video. I noticed when I was kind of searching around that a lot of the Onion links were in Reddit, for example. So it seemed to me that, again, keeping with this idea that it's more of a forum-based medium or space than, you know, a social network, it seemed to me that like the Reddit community and the 4chan community is also kind of the dark web community.
To some degree. I guess it depends on which subreddit you're talking about. There's right. one that I use. It's called r/deepweb. And that one tends to be a lot of people that are just curious about it. And they'll come on there to ask questions. And then there are a few experts on there that try to debunk a lot of the myths and stuff. So it's not necessarily the same community, but and then there's another one called r/darknetmarkets, and that's pretty much all people who either buy or sell on the darknet markets. So it's not necessarily 4chan, but you might get some of the same people crossing over to both, I would say.
Right. And just out of curiosity, looking at these different marketplaces, have you noticed any kind of technical services in terms of like bots or botnets?
Yes, actually. There are some people offering them for sale or offering sort of malware type programs and
these phishing type of things.
Yeah, definitely. So they'll have some, you know, program or, you know, virus that they're selling. They'll say, you know, that you can use this to infiltrate someone else's website or to get revenge on someone. And now I don't always know which of these are scams and which aren't. The way people figure out often which are scams and which aren't are through the forums from the marketplaces a lot of times. Or there are a couple of just general forums. There's this one, I'm forgetting the name offhand. It's called Darknet Market Avengers. And that one isn't dedicated to any one specific market, but it's just kind of all the darknet markets in general. So people might come on there and say, hey, is this vendor a scammer or is this product a scam? And that's how people can sort of discern the truth from the false.
The same way people do with Amazon reviews, right?
Yeah, exactly.
More or less.
As strange as that seems, but...
Yeah. So I want to ask a bit about one of my associations with the dark web was whistleblowing and WikiLeaks and these types of things. And obviously it has this, you know, as we were talking about with the Onion relay technology, it's more anonymous and I guess conducive for people to exchange confidential information. But is there some other aspect of the dark web aside from the Onion routing or just the general anonymity that would make it more conducive for these types of like political acts when you're whistleblowing against a government or trying to establish a coup, for example?
Some other, you mean like in the technical sense or?
Yeah. Or like, is it just that anonymity that makes it a good place for whistleblowers or?
Yeah, I think so. The anonymity and the fact that it's difficult to crack sometimes. Plus you have those services like the Proton Mail, which Proton Mail is available on the ClearNet, but a lot of these anonymity focused email and messaging services are also on Tor. So you get the Tor combined with the encrypted emails. I guess people feel safer doing these kinds of political content or political messages. There are some blogs on there too, I've seen, where people also discuss sort of controversial things. And I suppose it's just the idea that it's safe, or, you know, that your identity is disguised. I don't think it's 100% safe, but you're less likely to be traced.
I can think of a few political figures in the last election who could have used a bit more email security.
Hillary?
But when would you say, I guess my last question has to do with, would you say that from the forums you've seen, I mean, we talk about like Breitbart as an alternative media space, mm-hmm. With conspiracy theories like InfoWars, et cetera. Is that kind of the profile, would you say, of these conversations? That is it a kind of harboring space for Pizzagate theories and stuff like that? Or is it people kind of genuinely talking about, you know, controversial issues, but with a sense of more truth or being more informed?
I think it's a little of both. I have noticed a lot of conspiracy theory type information on the dark web in various sites, but I think there are some people who genuinely have, you know, true dirt. In fact, WikiLeaks has a Tor site as well. I don't know if you knew that, but I think, you know, again, it's a big mixture. I have noticed a lot of people that sound like total crackpots to me, you know, like, did you know that there's a hollow earth and there's a civilization of aliens inside it? But
right.
I think the actual WikiLeaks site, you know, that seems to be some genuinely truthful information. And there are a couple other forums and sites I've seen that are like that, where, you know, you might have to verify what they're talking about, but it doesn't sound so out there that it's like, what planet are you from?
Yeah, because I mean, and just another follow-up is that, as you mentioned, I don't know the exact stats. I'll try to pull them up of where the dark .NET users come from. But that's one interesting part about the anonymity, is that people are coming from all different places, but you don't necessarily know where they're coming from. Because I guess most people communicate in English on the dark web, but, you know, on Facebook or Twitter, you usually tell where people are from.
It's not just in English. There are a lot of sites in other languages, but you have to sometimes search them out. I've noticed a lot of sites in German and Russian, Chinese, Japanese, Korean. One thing I noticed that with that Not Evil search engine, for example, like when you're using Google, if you have your account on it, it knows you speak English, then it'll search for English results, but you can change it to say, you know, search for all languages. But the Not Evil search engine doesn't have any of those defaults. Like, it'll just find things in any language that happens on Tor. And that was one of the things I noticed when I first joined. It doesn't filter out search results. It's just anything and everything that it can find.
And that's just, is that because it's just less commercialized, I guess? Because there's so much money in Google search engine optimization, for example.
Yeah.
Whereas the darknet is kind of a different space.
I think that is a part of it, that it's not as commercialized. Maybe they haven't put the effort into doing all of that filtering and personalizing it toward the specific person. Does that make sense?
it does. Because, my just impression was that a lot of stuff was broken. I didn't really know what I was doing. It was a mix of marketplaces and forums and taboo stuff. But I guess I would just encourage, like, you really can't know anything about it without downloading Tor and going in there. Are there any risks associated? Because I was doing this from my university's wireless, and I was just like, some of the stuff popping up on my computer was like, oh God. Is it generally safe to go on there?
I think it's safe. I do think sometimes it depends which sites you go on. And I've noticed a few that seemed sketchy. I've never actually downloaded anything from Tor, and that, I think, is one of the things that is quite risky, especially if it's a site you don't trust. There was one site I found recently that looked very vague, and it was just a list of files to download. And I mean, I don't know, there might have been nothing there, but I think there's a very high risk of getting malware from some of these files, especially PDF files, I'm told.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed some sites where the whole content was in PDF form. And, you know, so it's not that all of them are viruses, but there's just a very good chance that could be an issue.
Right. Because it's just, yeah, I view it as this kind of Wild West space where anything could happen.
Yeah, exactly. And I also one time had a guy that I was talking to, well, I don't know if you've heard about this one urban legend with the dark web, is that there are red rooms. Does that sound familiar?
No, what's that?
Well, okay, in theory, a red room is a site where you can pay money and watch a live murder being committed of someone. Mm-hmm. And if you pay more money, you can actually control the torture and murder of this person. And the reason I say it's an urban legend is that on Tor, at least, the speed is so slow that it would be really difficult to live stream video of anything. And so there are a bunch of sites that claim to offer that. But I think those two are scams.
Yeah.
And so what happened to me with one of these was I sometimes would write about them on my blog. I would sort of try to debunk the scam sites. And I had been emailing back and forth with the operator of one of these sites and saying, well, so what do you offer? How much does it cost? And he happened to look over at my blog and he saw that I was kind of mocking him on there. And he's like, oh, you're mocking me, huh? Well, this is your name. This is where you live. This is your wife's name. And this is where you went to school. And he had all this information about me. And that was kind of scary.
That's what I was talking about earlier when I've heard that can happen. That's creepy.
Yes. That's the only time it's happened to me. But I don't know exactly how he figured it out, but I had found at that time there was some kind of virus on my machine that was like a remote access Trojan, and I don't know if that's how he did it, or it's possible that he just, if he knew my blog, he might have, you know the term social engineering, he might have just used the blog and traced that information, kind of looked around and found out, oh, well, this is what this guy's name is, and this is...
Right.
It just kind of Googled it, you know, but...
Exactly, yeah.
But he was just trying to scare me. Like, I just kind of stopped the conversation after that, and I never heard anything else, but that was about as spooked as I got.
Yeah, it's an interesting space.
As our time up, there was one other thing I wanted to mention.
Sure, go for it.
The dark web isn't just Tor, and I think this is something that a lot of people don't know. Tor is only one network that comprises the dark web. There are a couple others called I2P and Freenet and ZeroNet and GNUNet, but these aren't quite as popular as Tor is. But they all basically have the same purpose, keeping you anonymous. And some of them have messaging, and you can set up websites and send email and stuff like that. And some of them are a little more complicated than Tor. I would say I2P in particular is geared more towards programmers and stuff. But,
and do they bring you to the same sites, or is like the Onion domain only for Tor?
No, they don't. They all have their own domain names, actually. I2P, for example, has they're called .i2p sites, or they call them EAP sites for short. Freenet, they call them free sites. They're one of the more complicated looking web addresses because it doesn't use like a dot blah 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 format. They call them URIs, or uniform resource identifiers. So it's a bunch of cryptographic characters, cryptographic hashes, and it's derived from the person who sets up the site has a... Are you familiar with PGP keys or cryptographic keys?
No.
Not really?
No.
well, it's basically a way of encrypting someone's identity and someone's messages. So whoever sets up one of those sites has, instead of like a email address or a username, it's one of these cryptographic things, and it's a bunch of random characters. So what the site looks like is USK at 123478-1571, you know, just a bunch of characters. Mm-hmm. And I think that throws a lot of people off. But basically, Freenet kind of looks the way Tor does, these very plain looking sites, and it makes it easier to set them up. And like Tor, it has email and messaging and file sharing, and the idea being that you can do it all anonymously and privately. So same basic idea.
Got it. Right. Yeah. It that was one of the things that's kind of, it wasn't too different from the ClearNet, at least the Tor browser, in terms of, I don't know what I was expecting, but I was a little bit let down. I was expecting more like things jumping out at you and stuff like that.
Yeah. No, I think the horror stories really, really exaggerate what's there. And what I try to do, like I said, is to try to debunk some of it. I mean, I've had the occasional scary experience, but I don't know if I mentioned there is a lot of child pornography on the dark web. That's one of the worst things.
Right. That's one of the main stereotypes with it, I think.
Yeah. And that unfortunately is true. And I'm not into that, but I just know it's there. And I know that a lot of people think that that's what it's for or something. That's not really true, but because it keeps you anonymous, then people who are into that sort of thing are going to set up on there. And but I like to assure people that, you know, law enforcement is trying to take care of it. They have shut down some of the major sites, but that's sort of like with the drugs, it's an after effect of having total anonymity. So
yeah, it's one of the reasons I was kind of like not going too deep into it, because I didn't want all that stuff popping up.
Well, one of my friends said that if you want to find it, you have to go looking for it. And that's pretty much true.
Well, Cyphus, thanks so much. This has been super interesting. And thanks for sharing your insights with us.
Sure. My pleasure.
I've just been speaking with Cyphus, an anonymous web blogger who writes reviews about services and social networks on the dark web. You can visit his blog at direclown.wordpress.com. And that's a wrap for this Halloween edition of the Social Media and Politics podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. And I very much enjoyed doing an episode that was based on some feedback from you guys. So if you have any other topics of interest or national cases you'd like me to explore, just drop me a tweet at SMMP Podcast and I'll get right on it. Thanks again for tuning in. I'm your host, Michael Becerra, signing off from Copenhagen. See you next time.